Blog Talk Radio.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is working to help keep you and your community safe from the threat of novel or new coronavirus. Take the following everyday steps to help avoid the spread of all respiratory viruses. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Cover your cough or sneeze with a tissue. Throw the tissue away and then wash your hands. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects or surfaces, such as remote controls and doorknobs. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. And stay home if you are sick. Call your healthcare provider if you develop fever, cough, or difficulty breathing. For more tips, visit cdc.gov.
Good morning, and welcome to got a little choked up there. Something in my throat. Welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm your host, Joy Keyes. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. You can also check me out on Twitter at Joy Keyes. Also check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes, and on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keyes. And also you can email me, just SaturdaysWithJoyKeyes@hotmail.com. I'd love to hear from you, comments, suggestions. You know, maybe you think of a guest that you want to have on the show, email me, let me know. And guess what, you guys? Wonderful news. Maybe you didn't hear. This show can now be heard on Spotify, on Stitcher, as well as iTunes, and here at Blog Talk Radio. So really lots of places. You're listening to your music. You get tired. You want to switch over to a podcast. We're right there. Just type in the name, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes, and the show will pop up, and you can pick an episode. Any of the episodes are all, they're all archived. So if you missed a live one, you can go back and, you know, look for the archived version of it, and it'll be there on all those different platforms. I want to say thank you for supporting the show. You know, I had a little hiatus, and then I'm back, and I know that there are people that are still supporting the show, downloading, and I really appreciate it. You know, I do the show because I'm learning about things, and I think it's important that I share this information with others, and you never know when you can use this information. So, for example, this month is Sickle Cell Anemia Awareness Month, and I'm going to have three guests today, not just two. I originally had two, but now I'm going to have three. So I'm going to pick up the line. I've got a doctor, a public health specialist, and a woman from a nonprofit. So give me a second here. I'm going to pick up the line. I think this is the doctor first. Hi, good morning. Is this Dr. Titi Lope?
Good morning. Yes, it is. Hi, Joy.
Did
how are you?
Did I pronounce your name? Hi, how are you?
You did excellently. You were amazing. That's exactly right.
Good. All right. Let's see if Mary is on the line. I think this is Mary. Good morning. Is this Mary Houlihan?
Good morning. This is Mary.
Hi, how are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for having me today.
Thank you for calling in. We're going to have another guest, actually, just a little surprise guest here, but I thought it was important. It's a local organization in Philadelphia, the Crescent Foundation, and they're doing some great work helping people with sickle cell. So this is Tahira Austin Muhammad. I think this is her. Tahira, you're here?
Hi, good morning, Joy. I am.
Thank you for calling in, and I'm so glad you, like, text me or sent me a message on Instagram. I love it.
Yes, and that was all to one of my good friends, Sister Aaliyah Kaber. She actually sent me one of your you were promo for Sickle Cell Disease Awareness Month on your Instagram page, and she's like, "You all need to be on her show," and I'm like, "Okay."
That's great. So that's great.
It worked out. The stars aligned.
Yes, I'm very happy. Let me tell the audience a little bit about the guest here. Dr. Titi Lope Facipe, I hope I pronounced her last name correctly. Did I do that right?
You did. This is amazing, actually. You're spot on.
Okay, good. She is the co-director of the Texas Children's Sickle Cell Program and also an assistant professor of pediatrics and hematology oncology at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. The special thing about Dr. Facipe is she is a pediatric hematologist, but she also is a person dealing with sickle cell. So she's going to have a really unique perspective today. to have Mary Houlihan. Am I saying your last name correctly?
Yep, exactly.
Okay, good. She is a health scientist in epidemiology and surveillance branch of the Division of Blood Disorders, National Center on Birth Defects and Developmental Disabilities, Center for Disease Control and Prevention. Now, you guys say that all at once, in one breath. She has some great programs she's working on, and I think she's going to be expanding them, and she could talk about that. She's going to be expanding them this month in additional 7 states. The third guest is Tahira Austin Muhammad. Again, we just met the other day, and she is a co-founder and COO of the Crescent Foundation here in Philadelphia, and they are helping people with sickle cell anemia, and she can talk about her programs. I'll get to her shortly. Thank you all. Wow, this is powerhouse of guests here. Really appreciate you guys calling in. I'm going to start with the doctor because, you know, what is sickle cell anemia? I mean, some people may never have heard of it.
Yeah, so sickle cell anemia, and I'm going to use the word sickle cell disease, actually, describes a group of blood disorders where a person has inherited one mutation called the hemoglobin S mutation. And that hemoglobin S mutation, when you have 2 copies, or if you have a copy with another type of abnormal hemoglobin, it can change the shape of your cells, and that can then lead to several different problems in the body. As you know, blood goes everywhere in the body, and because it's a blood disorder, it can affect anywhere in the body. So that's a brief definition of sickle cell disease. I think the most important thing that people think about is that it's a disease that can cause severe excruciating pain, and it can cause organ damage as well to any organ of the body. So it's very important that you're highlighting it this month, and thank you again.
Mary, why do you think that this is a public health issue? Because when I think of public health, I'm thinking like a lot of people are affected, they're not getting help or assistance, the government needs to step in. Are any of these things true? Why do you feel as if it's a public health issue?
It's a public health issue, number one, because it affects a large number of people in our country. We think there's somewhere around 100,000 individuals with sickle cell disease living in the United States. However, when you think about the much larger universe, the rest of the world, the numbers are even greater than that. So, you know, I think it's important when we think public health not to just be U.S. focused, but right across the globe. And when we look at the numbers of individuals born with sickle cell disease, living with sickle cell disease throughout the world, the numbers are really quite high. It's also an important public health issue in the United States because it affects every aspect of an individual's life. It's not just their health. It affects their home life. It affects their education. It affects their working. You know, it really touches on every single component of someone's life. And so it makes it a very important issue. It's an issue that there are lots of challenges and lots of ways that those challenges can be addressed. And oftentimes, you mentioned the government, there are ways that those challenges can be addressed that the government, you know, really is the one who can play a role in helping there.
Tahira, now you are somebody who's trying to help. Why did you start this sickle cell? You could have started something else, you know, cancer. I mean, that's a very popular disease. I hate to say it like that, but you understand, I think, what I'm trying to say. Why sickle cell?
So I have sickle cell disease, so I wouldn't have started anything else. I was diagnosed with sickle cell disease SS at the age of 6 years old. So my story is quite different from many of my peers. I was born in Philadelphia and raised in Philadelphia, but I was born at Chestnut Hill Hospital. So this is a hospital outside of Philadelphia where sickle cell disease testing wasn't being done. So although I was born full term, my mom had a healthy pregnancy. No one knew I had sickle cell disease until I was 6 years old. So this has been my purpose, you know, for my life. And I had another, I've always been in research. My educational background, I have a BS in bio, I have a MPH, a master's in public health, and concentration is epidemiology, and I'm a clinical researcher at CHOP. But I have two friends also who live with sickle cell disease, and we've always done our individual things in the sickle cell community. You know, so whether that was helping individuals connect with resources, especially adults living with sickle cell disease, there are many resources in pediatrics, especially with the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia being home to Philadelphia and St. Christopher's Hospital for Children. They do a wonderful job, both teams. But when it comes to adults living with sickle cell disease in our area, there really isn't that much support.
And so that happens to a lot to hear. Let me just say, a lot of kids transitioning who are in, I would say, what do you call it? Like levels of poverty or disabilities and poverty, like people who are kids who are Medicaid and have disabilities and then they transition to adult. The system is just not set up to that transition. So there is a lot of need in that area of any child having some kind of, what do you call it? I can't think of the word, my brain's going blank, but you understand, some kind of disadvantage, so to speak, and then they're transitioning to adult. The macro society is not really there for them. Dr. Fasipe, I wanted to ask you, is it men more than women or children more than adults? And why would Tahira not get diagnosed till 6? Is that something you normally see? That's a lot of questions I threw at you, but I'm sorry.
No, if you allow me, I will pick up with Ms. Tahira. First of all, I'm happy to have a fellow sister, a sickle cell warrior on the line here today, and her story sounds amazing. I will say that there's an element here that we have not yet said, though you may have felt it may be implied. But one of the barriers for sickle cell disease is that it has faced systemic racism and historical neglect. And so compounded with the fact, as you mentioned, that it's a chronic illness that struggles with transition just like other chronic illnesses, sickle cell also has the unique challenge of being predominantly in the African-American population. However, it can affect anybody of any descent. But because for many years people thought it only affected Black people, and this has been, you know, throughout the for the America, United States specifically, minorities have been disadvantaged. So you add on several layers of disadvantages when you see that. And so her story is sad because at that time, I'm not sure what year she was born, but at that time it sounds as if there was not mandatory testing in her state that made hospitals check. Today, every state checks babies for sickle cell disease, but that took several years to get mandated for every state to do so. So her story should not happen again in today's world, but at the time she was talking about, it was very common for a child to be not recognized to have sickle cell disease. And I will say every once in a while, I still see children that get late diagnoses because they've moved from a different country. Or they were born in a rural setting that didn't have the resources. So resources are very important when talking about sickle cell disease. And then to the other question about male versus female, sickle cell can affect anybody. It doesn't matter whether you're male or female. Because you inherit it from your parents, you get one copy from mom, one copy from dad, and so it doesn't matter whether you're male or female. However, when we look at the hospital admissions, we see that women are more likely to be hospitalized, but women are also more likely to live longer than men, and that's something we're still trying to understand. So when we look at gender differences, the differences in sex, it seems to be more about healthcare utilization and lifespan.
Now, Mary, does this ring true to why you're doing your sickle cell data collection program, to find out this information of why men are not being hospitalized and women are being hospitalized more? Tell us a little bit more about the sickle cell data collection program.
Sure, thanks. Yes, I think that there are certainly goals. We're trying to better understand the disease, but quite frankly, we're steps before that, we're still trying to understand how many people in the United States actually have sickle cell disease. And
exactly.
That's because, well, we do have the newborn screening program, so we know how many babies are born in the United States, but as Dr. Fasipe said, there is no program to understand how many people are moving here from different countries. There's no program to understand how many adults there are in the United States that were born before newborn screening was implemented in their state of birth. And so we quite honestly don't know how many individuals with sickle cell disease are living in the U.S. That means we don't know where they live. We don't know where they're going to receive their health care. We don't know who the doctors are that are taking care of them. So those are the really basic questions that our surveillance program is still trying to get a handle on. Once we better understand that, we are absolutely trying to better understand healthcare utilization. How many times are people going to the hospital? Where are they going to the hospital? Why are they going? Which hospitals are they going to? And by having a better understanding of that information, it's kind of like, why do you fill out the census report? It's to know where resources are needed and to make better plans so that people with sickle cell disease have better access to care. So that's really a big part of what we're doing. And we're also collecting this data and making it available so that people who are able to make changes in healthcare policy, in healthcare provision, can use this information to be the evidence that's needed to make those changes in ways that are going to positively affect the sickle cell population.
Now, Tahira, does this sound like something you would want as someone who has sickle cell? Do you think this is beneficial? And also tell us about some of the symptoms that you're having that you deal with on a day-to-day basis.
So having a registry for data is the most important thing the sickle cell community can have, because where there's data and numbers, then you can justify where funding needs to go. So, and without that data, then it's really hard to say, you know, well, the sickle cell community needs funding for research. The sickle cell community needs funding for more comprehensive centers. And that especially is true for the adult sickle cell community and for those rural areas, especially in Pennsylvania, where we know there are people living with sickle cell disease, but they don't have the resources that those who are living in the city may have or may have access to. And many times it has nothing even to do with the type of insurance that you have. You can have really great insurance and still not have the needed resources as an adult living with sickle cell disease that will help you have a better quality of life. So, yes, data collection and that type of registry is really important. When it comes to my day-to-day complications, I have to say I'm really blessed. I don't have those day-to-day complications that many of my peers have when it comes to chronic pain. My complications come during the winter, you know, and that's when I get acute pain crises or acute pain episodes. And I also deal with acute chest syndrome, which is a type of pneumonia that people with sickle cell disease may experience. And with that, because I've undergone so many blood transfusions throughout the years, you have to be very careful with giving me a blood transfusion because I have so many antibodies. And because of that, my body tends to reject the blood. So the last scare that my family went through was 2 years ago. I had just had or 3 years ago, I just had my daughter. I got really sick during the winter months. I had acute chest syndrome. My hemoglobin dropped to a 3. And my baseline hemoglobin is usually between a 10, a 9 and a 10. And so
wow.
It was pretty scary. And I had to get a blood transfusion. But the blood transfusion ended up making things a lot worse. And I actually went through something called a delayed hemolytic transfusion reaction, where the blood that I received literally it just didn't do my body any good. And so I ended up blacking out, and I had to just get through the pain until I was able to come out come out of that blackout, and you know, I had a great medical team, and I mean, they just went to work with trying to save my life. So yeah, but when it comes to day to day complications, my story, because of the type of sickle cell that I have and my genetic composition, you know, sickle cell disease is an individualistic disease. Everyone, how it affects everyone is differently. So although I have SS, someone else with SS can experience pain every day. But that's not my story. It's not my experience.
Let me ask Dr. Fasipe about her experience. Dr. Fasipe, is anything she's talking about, is that happening to you, or do you have something different in terms of the symptoms? Like she said, it's individualistic. What's happening with your health and how it's affecting you?
Thank you. Yeah, so as Ms. Mira was talking, I resonated with so many of the things she said. I also have hemoglobin SS disease, but like she said, even in the same family, two people can have the same type of sickle cell, and it can look very different. Mine happens more with triggers as well. So whether it's cold or extreme stress, you know, our monthly cycles, things like that, those are things that can make me feel worse. I don't deal with chronic daily pain, but I deal with pain kind of as she described. I also have antibodies. In fact, everything she was saying was just like making me think about things I've gone through. And so, you know, she's hitting at an important point. With sickle cell, it's sometimes difficult to treat because when we think about our blood bank supply, like getting transfusions for people with sickle cell, it's not it does not always have a lot of genetic diversity. And so even though they may look like we match, there's going to be some slight differences. And so it's very common for people with sickle cell to develop antibodies to blood transfusions. And so we have to be very cautious with that. And so for me, I get encouraged when I hear of others like Ms. Tahirin and my friends. We share our experiences. Again, they're usually different, but they all have several similar themes. We all understand pain. We all understand what it's like to be in a hospital and, you know, worry about your family, worry about yourself. And, so we have a lot of shared experiences, even though they may present differently.
Now, Mary, I'm not sure if you're familiar with this. There's the Sickle Cell Treatment Act of 2003. Have you heard of that? And can you expound on that? They were talking about different optional Medicaid benefits for sickle cell people, Medicaid reimbursements. Do you know any of that information at all?
I am familiar with the Sickle Cell Treatment Act. I'm not sure that I know all of the fine details of it. Probably the one that I'm a little more familiar with is the more recent law that was passed in 2018 for sickle cell disease surveillance and research. The Sickle Cell Treatment Act, yes, of 2003 certainly, you know, does exist. I'd be happy to look for more information for you, but I'm not
Don't
sure
worry.
That I know
no, no.
enough
I
of
just
the details
was,
to
I
be.
Was, yeah, so you're
yeah.
dealing with your program and the data collection. Now, Dr. Fasipe, just a question. Can you die from sickle cell? Is this contagious?
So let me start with the contagious part. It's not contagious. You inherit it. So you get it from your genetics, so your parents and ancestors. That's how people get it. And so once you get it, you don't pass it on like how you can pass on an infection, but you have the genes of sickle cell inside of you. So when you have children, you can pass on that mutation. Now, that doesn't mean all your children will get sickle cell, but they'll at least get one copy of that mutation. And so it depends. We do encourage people with sickle cell, or if you have one copy and you have something called sickle cell trait, we encourage everyone to make sure that they know their status and their partner status so they can have genetic counseling discussions about their future children and the risk that the future children may have. And then, so you asked about dying. So, you know, sickle cell, I would say before the 80s, so 70s and before all of that, it was definitely a disease marked by shortened lifespan in the United States. And it appeared to be a disease of childhood because people would rarely see adults with sickle cell disease. Over the years, there have been certain improvements that have allowed children to live longer. And now the fight is, as Ms. Tahira said, about the adult population as well. We want to make sure that we understand what happens to people when they age with sickle cell disease. I will say I know people of sickle cell disease of varying ages. The way I describe it is that it's a chronic disease, but it can have life-threatening complications. And so sadly, there's still children who die of sickle cell disease. And there's sadly young adults that can die of sickle cell disease. We're trying to work to change that story and to move that needle. And the three people that you have on today, you know, we're all fighting that battle in different ways. The CDC has the most up-to-date numbers on lifespan. And I would say it's an average, but it's not perfect because we really need to look more at the data. But now people are living much longer with sickle cell disease, thankfully, and we want to continue that trend.
That's really great to hear. And a lot of things, people, I know you said that it's a trait thing, but I just wanted to emphasize that it's not contagious, because no matter you say stuff, sometimes people don't hear it, and then they might find they have a friend or somebody, and that person gets ostracized. And I just really wanted to make it clear that it's not contagious for other people. And you can be friends and you can touch them and, you know, all these things can still happen. Tahira, talk about your One Gene, One Life program. That was really interesting. Is that still happening?
Yeah. So we actually just wrapped up One Gene, One Life with Penn Medicine and their first year med student in their genetics course. So what One Gene, One Life is, it is an emerging program where we go around and we actually get to humanize sickle cell disease to medical students, right? Because they are the ones who will be our doctors, our future doctors, and our future leaders in medicine and in science, and who will, you know, take care of us. And so it is important that they see us at our best, right? And not when we first go into the ED seeking help, and then they already have these biases or preconceived notions of what sickle cell is and the experience of sickle cell disease. So we get to come in, you know, as our educated, bubbly selves, and we get to tell them, you know, how sickle cell has impacted our lives, you know, and, you know, what they should, how they should treat those who are living with sickle cell disease and how it will make their jobs easier if they ask these type of questions, right, and if they didn't assume certain things and if they didn't stigmatize those who are adults living with sickle cell disease, especially as drug seekers, you know, even through an opioid crisis. Because when we go to the ED, that's the last place that we want to be. And oftentimes we are suffering for days or even weeks before we end up going, you know, to seek help from those who are in medicine or healthcare workers, period. And so, you know, this program, we have a partner, a long-term partnership with Penn. We've done Drexel students. This upcoming, next school semester, we'll be doing a virtual HBCU tour for historically black colleges and universities for their medical schools. And then we've also done on a high school level as well to high school students who are interested in medicine, right, when they go into undergrad or they're interested in science and they're taking a genetics course. Sickle cell disease is one of those illnesses that it's great to teach genetically because it's so straightforward, right?
And
you can understand it from an inheritance pattern level when you're teaching that as a professor or, you know, as a high school genetics teacher. And so it's interesting going into these high schools and talking about sickle cell disease. You always have a few students who are like, you know, I have a person with sickle cell disease in my family, or I have a friend who has sickle cell disease. So not only are you teaching it from a scientific point of view, but you're also, you get to have this experience with these students, you know, on a familiar level, because, you know, we're people who live with sickle cell disease, but they get to tell us about their experience with the person in their lives who have sickle cell. So it's a great program, one of my favorite programs, and it does well. I love our partnerships.
Tell us real quick your social media sites where people can find more information about the Crescent Foundation, Tahira.
Absolutely. So you can find us on Instagram at Crescent Foundation, SCD. You can find us on Facebook at Crescent Foundation, a Sickle Cell Initiative. And our website is CrescentFoundationSCD.org.
That's great. I'm going to close the show with Dr. Fasipe. Treatments for sickle cell, Tahira mentioned about drug seeking. What drugs would they be seeking, and are there other things that can be given? I remember hearing some people can't take the drug, and then they have to take another. There's like two different major ones. Can you talk about the drugs that are used to help treat it in acute situations, and also on an ongoing daily basis?
Yes, for sure. So in an acute situation, when you're in pain, you are suffering and you do need pain medication. And right now, one of the mainstays of pain management are opioid medications. And so, unfortunately, because of some of the systemic racism and biases that we've discussed, people with sickle cell are often labeled as drug users or drug seeking. They are actually care seeking, because they're functional individuals with lives and jobs that seek care when they're in pain. But unfortunately, they did get that label and stigma. And so I really think Ms. Tanisha's work with the medical school is vital. And so when we talk about treatments for the disease itself, how to modify the disease, the medication hydroxyurea has been the first and only medicine for a long time, for several years for sickle cell. Recently, in the past year and then even 2 years ago or so, there have been three other FDA-approved medications for sickle cell disease. And so I would encourage any individual with sickle cell disease to talk to their doctor about those options to manage the daily parts of sickle cell. And then there is one cure so far for sickle cell, but it's not available for everybody. It's a bone marrow transplant or a stem cell transplant. But research trials are looking at ways to cure and also treat sickle cell disease. So we have a lot of things coming down the road and the pipeline. And so please check out the CDC website for even more details about that as well.
Mary, just real quick, do you have any other programs that people might need to know about since you're doing all these different state-to-state data tracking?
Sure. I would highly encourage people to please visit our CDC website. And I think if you Googled CDC and sickle cell disease, it'll take you to that. There are numerous publications, fact sheets, PDFs talking about all different issues related to sickle cell disease. We also have an entire toolkit specifically about sickle cell trait, what it is, how it is inherited, what it can mean for your life. There's information for students to share with their schools and with their educators about what it means to have a student with sickle cell disease. So I really hope that people check that out. There's podcasts, there's videos, there's all sorts of material.
That's great. You guys did a wonderful job today. Pat yourself on the back. I think the information we shared will really help people. This show is heard not just only in the United States, but I have had guests in Africa and Europe and South America, even Asia. People are listening to the podcast. So if they stumble upon this, this is really great information for them to have. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Fasipe, Mary Houlihan, and Tahira Awesome-Hamid for coming on the show this morning.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. So again, talking about the CDC, the number you guys can call is 1-800-232-4636. That'll give you some more information about anything that the CDC is handling. They also have an email contact form on the CDC info webpage. It's on the left side, and it's an email contact form if you want to submit questions. So those are two great places you can connect with the CDC about, you know, anything, not just sickle cell. They deal with a lot of stuff. So thank you again for listening. You can follow me on Twitter at Joy Keys. Also, check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keys. I'm going to be giving away some books by Nick Stone. They've been very happy to donate some books that I can give away, so keep an eye out for that. I still have CDs of Emmanuel Wilkins, a jazz saxophonist CD. Also, some other books. Just check out the social media. You'll see lots of different giveaways. I use a big picture. It says giveaway. Are you ready for a giveaway? You never know. Somebody may not have answered yet, so try and see if you can. I try to give equal opportunity, so sometimes I say if you've won a gift in the last 30 days, you can't do it. But other than that, most people, you have a chance to win a book or CD. And again, like I said, the movie theater is opening it up. I'll probably be giving away some tickets to the movie theater. A lot of great shows coming out. And, I'll probably be having some great actors on, so keep an eye out for that. Again, thank you for your support, and really appreciate you guys tuning in. You guys have a wonderful weekend, and I will see you next Saturday.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is working to help keep you and your community safe from the threat of novel or new coronavirus. Take the following everyday steps to help avoid the spread of all respiratory viruses. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Cover your cough or sneeze with a tissue. Throw the tissue away and then wash your hands. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects or surfaces, such as remote controls and doorknobs. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. And stay home if you are sick. Call your healthcare provider if you develop fever, cough, or difficulty breathing. For more tips, visit cdc.gov.